Chris, what would you like to get out of today's session? How would you like to serve the members? Obviously, the ones that are here live today and the ones that are checking this out on the recording online.
Mate, probably, like I've been with Game Changers 12 months now, a good time to review the last 12 months and have a look over some of the key learnings and so forth that have happened. Yeah, I guess I don't know. Open the conversation up about going forward and see what opens up. I don't know.
Interesting. Yeah, what I find, the reason we kind of introduced these a while ago is that, we've been in the game for a long time. And what we found before when we were just doing the one-on-one coaching, which is kind of how we started, we get great results. But we felt that there was so much knowledge and so much expertise that our clients had through their own journey in business and what they'd been through before us, long before us, and with us as well, how they took the learnings and the teachings and the understandings into their business. And we felt that there was a huge disconnect because the rest of the members were missing out on that. They were missing out on that knowledge, that wisdom. And that was kind of where we started floating into the three agreements around being quick to execute, quick to ask for help, and quick to share your lessons and learnings, and even more the hot seats. And I must say, we've had some incredible feedback from the people around the hot seats because we all have our own learning style. We all have our own way of doing things. And when we can kind of dive into somebody else's psychology and understand how they're doing things, it causes us to see things differently, right? It's no different to the way you guys work with us. Like we share something like, oh yeah, that would work for me, or that would work for my business, or I've never thought about that before. And so today's session, I feel this is a really good chance for us to reflect on kind of getting a bit of understanding of where you were before and where you're at now. And equally too, how you've used the Opulence program, how you use the coaching, how you use those insights in yourself to kind of gain the most to where you are now, where you guys got the second team on now?
Yes, we do.
Yeah. So you guys have essentially doubled that. There's been good increase in profitability. There's been good increase on getting your time back, but there's also structure to now scale 3 or 4 or 5 teams if you want to as well. Yep. I did hear a rumor though that you've been getting Johannes to generate some leads for you. I heard a rumor that you asked him to stop those a little while back because you got a bit too busy.
Yeah. And we've got him going again now. And that was more about, getting our processes up and running properly. I have a bad habit of just biting off more than I can chew, as I'm sure most of us do, and just seeing how it goes.
Yeah.
And it was a bit like that. Yeah.
Which is the thing is that if we talk about the transition, like you guys are over that $1 million mark now, if we talk about the transition, what I've seen time and time again is that the strategies and tactics and techniques, the beliefs, the behaviors, the disciplines that get us to $1 million or 1.2 are very different to what we need to get us to 10 million, to get to the 8-figure mark. Very different, right? And what you just shared then is typical like entrepreneur hustle that gets you to the 7 figures, which is like, let's just do it and see what happens.
Yeah.
Right. Yet that comes with success and it comes with failure. And yet in that container of that 0 to 1, 1.5 million mark, the failure is only so big.
Mm.
Right. Mm. Yet when you're growing an 8-figure company, that failure could be catastrophic.
Mm.
Right. So the mentality needs to change. If we rewind back to like 13, 14 months ago, Chris, what was going on for you and what was going on for you in business?
Well, I guess we would have to start that story, we'd have to go to quite a few years ago. I had a business before that was a labor hire company, grew it really, really fast. Really, really fast. The business was only running for 3 years and 3 months and we turned over $12 million in that time.
Wow.
And it just went berserk. And then I guess behind that, I came from a family that never had any money. I had no idea. So I didn't have anyone around me who had ever, made anything more than 50 grand a year, and it was just way out of my comfort zone. So I fairly quickly, in hindsight, sabotaged that fairly quickly. 3 years and 2 months. And that went upside down pretty bad for me.
Yeah.
And then fast forward to 8 years later, which is where I was before I started with you guys, I felt myself making some of the same mistakes thinking some of the same thoughts, and feeling, you know, that I was searching. I knew I was looking for something. I'd been through a bit of a wilderness period before I started this business, and you know, really, really, I could see the writing on the wall that it was in me. It wasn't out there. It was in here. But I didn't know where to look or who to ask. As I said, I've got no one, or I had no one around me at that time who had done this and been successful. And so, yeah, I started asking questions. And I think, you know, how things just come up when they need to. I think it was actually John who mentioned it to me first. I think he was first, yeah, on a month or so before me, and said, oh, I'm doing this. And that was my answer. Marnie called me. We've all had that call. and then Chris called me after that, and away we went. Haven't looked back.
Looking back now, there's so many things I want to pull apart. If you look back now at who you are now in business as a person, who you're being, and also looking at, we can look a little bit at the structures you've got set up now and the things you have in place. What do you think the biggest gap was for you now, if you look back to who you were then and what you had in place then to now? Like, if you could determine like one kind of core thing, what do you think the biggest gap was for you?
Certainly my inner game stuff was not, you know, that was non-existent for me back then. But, and then certainly around some nuts and bolts stuff, some ability stuff, some, you know, some of my beliefs and so forth. Trying to nail it down to one
thing. What about the inner game though? Like, what was a belief that you found that had been playing around consciously or unconsciously that was revised or wasn't serving you?
I grew up that you had to work hard for your money.
Yeah.
I grew up that, you know, believing the rewards are in hard work, and yes, they are. But geez, there's bigger rewards in smart work.
Yeah.
Growing up, growing up, I'm 42, for God's sakes, I'm still growing up, but, it coming through and believing that, that I wasn't really, qualified to be successful. That I was still, you know, still a bit of a cowboy. You know, and successful people, you know, they left school, went to uni, worked hard, contributed properly, you know, and all that sort of stuff. And I didn't believe I was doing any of that. I believe I was just a bit of a gambler. And it just happened to pay off. So I guess the biggest gap now that we're saying is I didn't feel like I deserved it. Any win I ever had. I somehow got through life without feeling like I deserved any win I ever had.
In many ways.
That's changed a big time in the last 12 months.
Yeah. And in many ways though too, like that also comes from the belief that like you're a gambler, right? Yeah. That you were gambling, and if you won, it was by chance and not by choice. So therefore, in order for you to win, you would have had to have been lucky. Yep. Right. And then what makes you so lucky than others? You weren't actually connecting that and relating that to the inputs that you were putting in.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I wasn't giving myself credit.
Yeah. There was a disconnect there between the physical activity and the psychological activity of what you were doing to what you were getting and realizing absolutely. Inputs equal outputs.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
For sure.
And like, what's your belief now then around like deserving? Is it even on the same context of deserving or not deserving, or has it changed completely?
No, it's completely changed for me now. You know, it's only complete. Actually, I had a really good conversation with Chris yesterday. It crystallized a bit more for me. It was a conversation about, you know, bringing my light out and letting people see, being But being who I am authentically, for what it is, instead of hiding it, and you know, and it's not about gloating or boasting or but you know, being who you are, showing the results of what you've done, without shame, and knowing you did it, and helping other people, contributing to other people along their way.
Yeah. We're conditioned though. This is what's I'm going to call it like it is. This is what's fucked up about the Australian society, is that we've created a society around tall poppy syndrome. Now, that's actually not anywhere else in the world. That doesn't exist anywhere else in the world. It exists in Australia. And I think, like, I've been putting a lot of thought into this recently, because like we've got some international clients. And it's really interesting to note that their beliefs are very different to us, right? Yeah. Asian cultures, American cultures, European cultures, they all have these different constructs and contexts of the way their beliefs are formed. And in America, it's like people will go and borrow themselves up in debt to the nines, living in a fucking shoebox, to buy like some SUV, so that when they're out there, they're seen to be something that they're not. Yet in Australia, we almost do the opposite. Like, we'll have money and we'll drive around in a broken down Corolla, right? Because we don't want to be seen. We don't want to be seen as having money, right?
Yeah.
You're laughing because you know it's true.
I'm laughing because yesterday I was driving a 2001 Rodeo. Holden Rodeo. Yeah, I know. It's exactly right. Yeah.
And we feel more comfortable driving those shitbox cars.
Yeah,
than actually owning what we've earned.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I remember thinking, that's why I was laughing. I was thinking that exact thing yesterday. I'm driving around, you know, it's just our runabout, our work runabout. And I just walked out into our yard and I just, into our work yard at the shed, and jumped in the rodeo and went down the paddock, left my nice ute there, went down the street, I should say, left my nice ute there, and I'm driving down the street. And I saw somebody and they looked at me and I looked at them. They didn't recognize me because of the car I was in. And that just got me thinking, yeah, you know, I don't give a shit what I drive. I know that, but that's exactly what you're talking about. You know,
We think we don't give a shit. And we don't give a shit the way that a lot of people think we give a shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
But unconsciously, we're programmed to make ourselves small and not shine our light.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Because it's actually irrelevant what we wear or what we drive. Like all stripped off, as naked beings, we're the same.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? All stripped off. And something's happened. We've been programmed in such a way that when we started to put on that conditioning, that we've been conditioned by some of the largest companies in the world. Like, think about the shit that women have around their looks, around makeup, around breasts, around what they wear. It's all been programmed into us through advertising, right? Fear-based advertising. But here's the thing, is that I think that when we shine our light the brightest, we actually allow others the permission to do the same.
Yeah.
When we're willing to own our success and our failures, right? Both, because we can't get rich collecting one-sided coins, both exist. When we can own that in its entirety, then we actually allow others the permission to do the same, if they're ready. And there's a lot of people that we have in this journey. I'm not sure if you've experienced it, Chris. I know I certainly have. That along this journey, you have people that kind of fall by the wayside because they're not ready yet. And you shining your light, or you achieving success, or you even just being out there doing your do, creates conflict for them. And they're not in a position that they can actually applaud that and acknowledge that and appreciate that. They'd rather scold it, make fun of it, talk it down purely from the fact that they haven't got that for themselves. Mm. But the reason they haven't got that for themselves is because internally they're conditioned to look upon it that way. Like, how could we ever attract an experience for ourselves of being wealthy, of being successful, of having fucking amazing relationships, if internally we want to scold other people that have that?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Right, because we're always projecting a version of ourselves onto others, right? It's called holographic change. And it's something that I talk a lot to our coaches about. And if we can't look at somebody else and acknowledge and appreciate all of who they are and their mess, we can't possibly do that for ourselves.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
Totally get that. Yeah, absolutely.
We've got a few comments coming through. Vanessa, wow, Chris, thanks for sharing. Edie, I'm glad you have recognized that feeling can address the underlying feelings and the emotions that go with that. Vanessa, amen, Barry, so much pressure. I get so much judgment because I treat myself to the hairdresser once a week for some me time. Who judges you, Vanessa? Who judges you? I treat myself to the therapist and I feel it's far more important than the shoes or makeup. Totally, totally. Because what we're talking about here, though, is really allowing ourselves to step into our truest self-expression of who we are, right? Fuck what others think. But here's the interesting thing is when we talk about the creature neurology, right, which is the part of us that has this programming built into it, that part of us wants to reproduce and wants to survive. And a way that we survive is through belonging to others. It's pack mentality. And if we go and buy that fancy car, Chris, we might not belong to others anymore. And so it goes back to our innatest way of being as human beings. So what have been some other things? Because the beauty is that I believe it all starts with the inner game.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then the outer game is what really allows that to shine. What have been some other core things that you've discovered about yourself, about your business?
Look, I would say the key learning I had early on, the one that flipped the switch for me, was that understanding that the business is only a reflection of the owner.
Yeah.
That was the internal of the owner. That was a big flip for me because I was, kind of blaming the business or blaming this or blaming that or blaming people and saying, geez, why do they always do that? Why is this such a mess? And then, when I learned that, this is just a reflection of me, that's a mess because I'm a fucking mess, and fixed it up, that's exactly. So, it sounds overly simplistic, but once I made that link, that was a big key learning.
It is simplistic, but it's like an onion.
Yeah.
And so you can get it, but then you're like, oh, now I get it. Mm. And then it goes deeper again. You're like, oh, now I really get it. And so that one core learning around like the business and your life is a reflection of you. It is simplistic, yet it's multidimensional. There's so many layers to the depth of which we can own, accept, acknowledge, and appreciate that.
And that just led down a path of, me taking control of the culture in amongst our people. Before you guys came along, I think we'd been through like 53 or 4 or something employees in 5 years. Wow. In like, the last 12...
Had previous experience with a labour hire company.
Yeah. In the last 12 months, I think I've lost 3 or 4.
Yeah.
Since I've been with you guys. 3 or 4 maybe. Yeah, 4 I think. And added to my team that's been a big thing, our culture change thing. And that just comes back to my attitude about people. Do we pull them in and burn them up, or do we pull them in and build them up? And that's just paying tenfold. Other key learnings, again, how you said there before, it's like an onion and there's different layers of as you go down. Something I had really early on, I think it may have been before you guys, but I brought it in and then really clarified it with you guys, was I read a book, forget his name, Personal MBA, it's called, and just breaking business up into 5 sections and focusing on those 5 sections about where the bottlenecks are and where to move on next. That really changed my business. I worked through that. With my coach and just identify bottlenecks in each part. And it feels like each of those bottlenecks that we first come up with are way down there somewhere. I don't even remember what they were. And we come up against new bottlenecks, which is a great thing about business, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just keep coming up with new ones.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the business being a reflection of me giving to the business so it grows, and now it's now the business is part of my growth. It's just kind of symbiotic. Is that the word?
Where
you have this coexisting, co-beneficial relationship. And that's what it feels like now. It feels like I'm growing just as much out of my business as my business is out of me.
It's such a beautiful realization, because I can really not just hear that, Chris, in you, I can feel that there's there's actually an embodiment of that statement. It's not just saying it, but there's an embodiment of that statement. And I can only imagine the growth that's coming from that as well. How's your relationship changed to challenge? Like, if you look back to how you used to relate to challenges and struggle and problems before to now, how's your relationship changed?
Oh, my temper hasn't improved too much. My reaction has. But look, I really love it. I really do. It was, I've always been somebody who loved a good challenge and see where the limits are. But now I really, really relishing it. And the challenges have changed. They keep changing.
And they won't stop.
No, I hope they don't.
No, they don't stop.
But no, I love it. It's part of life. It is life.
Yeah.
It's great.
What have been some of the greatest insights you've had around building a team? Like, I love what you shared before. You said you could either build them up and burn them up, or build it. What would you say?
No, burn them up or build them up.
Yeah, burn them up, build them up. What's been some of the biggest insights? Because I know that for a lot of the guys, a lot of our members, like, that's one path they go through. And for a lot of them too, like, when they join on board, they've got a team. And quite often, quite quickly, the team changes because they realise that their standards have not quite been where they could or should be. And here's the thing with team too. It's like they're possibly, each team member is there for a reason, a season, or possibly a lifetime. Yep. And it's important to understand that just because someone's been an A or a B grade player for a long period of time, it doesn't mean that they're always going to be an A or B grade player in your business. Like, the business has new needs as you grow and scale. And sometimes you have to replace those staff members or move them on or move them around to focus on growth with that business. And you put it so beautifully before, Chris, it's like your business is actually a living organism. It's got a life of its own. Like, it breathes, it lives. And therefore, everyone connected to it and everything connected to it, both resources and people, have to move and grow and expand with it. Otherwise, they will actually slow it down. They will kill it. They'll limit the growth potential of the business.
Yep.
What have been some of the insights you've had around staff?
Culture. The culture thing first came up for me, as that was a bottleneck, and that was Greg
Smadagasa.
Yep, that's the man. That's why I didn't remember that last name. And he mentioned it when we were over in Perth, and that was another layer off the onion that really got me focused on my culture. And out of that culture, it's only three or four guys. Like, I've only got nine guys. And I had those four guys, another one started through. And once that little culture, and once I got that idea through to them, which was very easy, and very quick, they pretty much recruited the next four and five themselves. They just came in.
Living organism.
We pulled on one guy. He didn't fit. He went, and another one just magically appeared.
Yes.
And that's what happens.
The right fit.
I had, you mentioned there before, I had a guy who had done his apprenticeship with me, who out of those 50 people in 5 years, he stayed with me for four of those 5 years, done all his time with me, and was with me in my belief that you just bring in the groundies, burn them up and send them on their way. He magically disappeared and got the shits one day and spat the dummy. A few months in. So the culture's really sorted out.
Yeah.
The staffing and that sort of stuff. So, I read top grading and recruitment processes and all that sort of stuff. Probably because of my experience before, you know, I kind of had all that down. That wasn't the problem for me. What the problem for me was seeing people as a resource.
Yes. The way you viewed them.
Yes. Rather than people as, you know, seeing people as what can this person do for me, to rather now I look at my staff and say, right, what can I do for these guys? You know,
yeah.
What are we going to do? How's this going? Yeah. Yeah. How's our culture feeling? I never asked that question before 12 months ago.
Yeah. Yeah. I think like top grading for everyone watching, listening, I think top grading and the other book, Who, are fantastic yep. books to read. Mm. You obviously had a lot of experience with recruiting in the past, but a lot yep. of people don't. You know, to have gone through as many people as you have, you've seen it all. But if you haven't hired staff before, even if you had not too successfully, I highly recommend reading Top Grading or Who. The top grading methodology is like second to none when it comes to hiring the best of the best. But as you've so elegantly pointed out, Chris, is that like it doesn't matter how good of it, like you can hire an A grade staff member, but if you've got shit culture, they yep. will appear to be a bad hire. And you know, this is something we went through in the 4 years we tried to hire VAs. We would hire these VAs, everything checked out, and they'd just do a shitty job. And we thought that they were crap hires. And then what we started to realize is that some of them, once we worked out what was going on, we realized they weren't bad hires. Some of them were fantastic hires. We didn't have the culture set up. We also didn't have the structure set up to allow them to be successful in their role. Like hiring an outsourced team is one thing, and Odesk and Upworks and stuff makes it a lot easier. But if you actually want them to be with you long term and successful, culture comes into it. I think Peter Drucker says that culture eats strategy for breakfast every other week. And what I would say is that it is possible that you can have an incredible strategy and shitty culture and not be successful.
Mm, absolutely. I've experienced that. Yeah.
Yep. You can have a shit strategy, a terrible strategy, and an incredible culture and kick serious goals. Because what you pointed out before is that when your team are so bought into the vision and bought into the company and bought into the family that you've created, they will go out there and do the right things for you. Like I'm amazed sometimes at the stuff my team brings back to me that they've done without my knowledge, without asking me permission. Because they've been empowered to be able to make decisions and be leaders in the organization. I think a lot of employers, they try to like knock their employees down, not necessarily consciously, but they try to kind of bottle them in too much, give them a lack of creativity and freedom. And let's be honest, like you don't want to have a business full of you and drones, because as perfect as you think that you are, there is weaknesses that we have, and we're often blind to our own shortcomings. What have been, and also to what you said as well, around they've gone and found employees, like that's a huge testament to you, mate, around what you created, that they feel confident enough that they'll put their ass on the line to find more people to join them. Like that's a huge, huge testament to you and what you're creating. What have been like, what are your top tips for creating culture? Like how have you guys gone about creating a good culture?
Well, firstly, I guess, you know, without getting too off with the fairies or anything like that, there's sort of, you know, you've got to be...
We can go Never Never Land.
Yeah, you've got to be pragmatic about where your people are. And I guess you've got to connect up, without trying to be stereotypical or anything like that, I guess you've got to firstly have a vision of what it is you're wanting and what your customer is wanting from your business. That gives you an avatar, I guess, a person you're after. Yeah. And a culture that comes to a culture around that. So one of our things was that, my guys, you've got to be really careful not to eliminate really, really great people who don't exactly fit your avatar.
Yeah.
Or what the beliefs about the people you have, you've got to be really careful that you don't just close everything off too much. But you know, the reality is for me and my customers and who we want to see, my guys are not tertiary educated. They're mechanical. They love a good time, and that sort of stuff. So, you know, one of the things we're doing, or we've already done it, we're buying a ute to do demolition derbies with and things like that. And we're just doing that together, you know. So, you know, there's this clapped up ute in the shed and another one parked next to it, and we're pulling parts off one to put on another.
That's going to become your new daily vehicle, right?
I know. But, you know, the boys are there until bloody 7 o'clock on a Saturday night drinking beers, pulling carby off one ute and putting on another and stuff like that, you know. Like that, those blokes love that stuff.
That's so good.
So, you know, if I went in and went for a culture of, we'll go out to dinner and you know, enjoy wine and cheese, you know, that you've got to be realistic about the culture you're after and make sure it fits. I'm sure, too, if I had, a wine and cheese arborist show up, you know, it might work for my customer, but it probably doesn't quite fit the stereotypical, you know, what they see, and there'd be something that doesn't quite fit for them as well. So, I mean, you got to be careful around this stuff. You don't want to block out really, really good people. But at the same time, for culture, you've just got to have a vision in your mind. And again, I didn't come up with the demolition derby. I went to the guys who are my best guys, and I said, what can we do? What's a bit of fun? You know?
Yeah.
How do we,
but that's how do we build on?
How, but yeah. Yeah. That's it.
That's leadership. Like what you've just shared there is, and it might have been smaller to the people that are here today or watching this, is that you didn't have to have it all sorted out.
No, and
that's one of the mistakes that I see so many leaders making is they believe to be a fucking exceptional leader, they have to have it all sorted out. That's not leadership. That's management. Management, and that's limiting your opportunity. As opposed to going to them, say, hey guys, what should we do? How do we work this out? And knowing how to facilitate the conversation in such a way that you arrive at a common outcome, because then they can take ownership for that. If you had said to them, hey, let's buy some utes and do them up, there's a high probability they wouldn't be there till 7 o'clock on Saturday night because it was your idea.
Yeah.
But because it was their idea, they bought into it.
Yeah.
They own it.
Yeah. Absolutely. Totally agree. And the other thing with management, Barry, because I've been a manager, is when you're a manager and you're telling people what to do all the time, you just make it work for yourself. You're locking yourself into that job forever.
Yeah.
The more you can go to your people and ask them the questions.
It's becoming reliable in the path of the business.
Yeah, totally.
Right, so we've covered, and if any of you guys here today have got any questions for Chris or myself, or anything we've discussed or something completely unrelated, please chuck in the chat. We'll be more than happy to answer it. So, Chris, we kind of dove down a little bit of the inner game. We could have spent all day there. Yep. And the importance of obviously inner game, how those beliefs that we are aware or not aware that we have, which you shared you weren't aware that you had that belief, significantly affect business. We talked a bit about leadership and team. Where do you think you've made where do you think has been another area of breakthrough for you?
Look, nuts and bolts stuff, marketing, marketing, sales, understanding, getting some processes around, that sort of stuff. Everything has always been very ad hoc with me.
Yeah.
Still got some hiccups and stuff going along in my sales process. Getting around the numbers better. The financial management better, getting around. So my business is a bit of a two-part business. I do a lot of contract works for roads and things like that, which I always thought was my cream, and you know where it was. And then I do, you know, say about 50% in residential private works. And I was always coming up against these cash flow problems because, of course, you only get paid once a month from the roads guys.
And typically that's after you've delivered it. You're invoicing after you've already had to pay out your guys to deliver on it.
To put that in contrast, we offer Zip Pay for our customers now. And now I've got a percentage of my customers, I'm getting paid before I do the job, which is crazy.
So you've got these commercial clients that you get paid after you do the job and after you paid for the job.
And after, yep.
And then residential clients that pay you before you do the job, before you pay the bills. And just to kind of, I suppose, extrapolate what that looks like is that if your business, and I've seen this so many times, if your business is on the commercial aspect side of things, or have pay arrangements like that, that significantly limits your growth and could actually cause you to go bankrupt. Because if the faster you grow, the more money you have going out. Now, there is an eventual swing where that money comes back into the business. But if you don't stop to stagnate for a while and let that catch up, that wave gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and in the time you can bleed broke, essentially.
Plenty of profitable businesses have gone, and this is what happened with the labour hire company, plenty of profitable businesses have gone broke making a profit. It's all about cash.
Because your tax builds up, but if you're on a accrual basis, you've got to pay your tax, but you still haven't been paid by the suppliers yet. So all the money blue. And if there is a problem with your pricing, by the time you work that out, it's too late.
It's too late. Yep. Yeah.
So
we're still in the process of flipping that on its head. Coming up against some challenges at the moment because all the roads guys have got all this money that they've got to get rid of before 4 weeks' time.
Just send an invoice to work in lieu.
Yeah. That's been a big realization for me and completely changed the game for me.
Yeah.
In terms of my cash flow, a lot less sleepless nights, you know, thinking, geez, I've got payroll tomorrow. How am I going to do that?
So the money you've got about compensating that then is to kind of balance that out with some residential work. And even more than that, you've taken it one step further by organising ZipPay to essentially where ZipPay finances it on behalf of the clients, and the clients have the bill with ZipPay as opposed to the bill with you.
Yep.
So you guys paid up front.
Yeah. And we have changed we used to drop everything and prioritise the roads and would put our private customers off. And say, look, we've got to drop this and go. I know we had you booked in for such and such a day, but we've got to push you back. We don't do that anymore. Now we've got one crew who never goes on the roads and the contract stuff. And, you know, they just, as long as they tick over that, the business just keeps on going.
Yeah.
And it gives us some ability to grow.
Out of curiosity, question that came up for me then, like awesome insight. In that, and it's not uncommon in trades businesses as well, because often the big money is in working for the builders, right, or working for other third parties. But that's often where the most risk is as well, because you know there's a whole "we'll pay you when we get paid" type scenario. There's these long payment terms, and often I've just heard so many stories, and some of the guys in the community as well that prior to joining us have been burnt. You know, 100 grand, 200 grand, 500 grand from a builder they worked with, always paid on time. Kept extending lines of credit over the years because they've been a great, loyal customer. And then one day the builder's fallen over and, oh, by the way, that $500,000 I owe you, you're not getting it back. So it really, really causes to be cautious around that. The question that came up to me is I'm curious to know, like, how have – I'm going to say the question once and I'll reframe it before you answer. How have you used the Opulence program to grow your business? And more specifically, I don't mean – around how you've used the coaching or the training or that stuff. Like, how have you used it, Chris? Like, what have you done and how have you shown up that's allowed what we've had or what we've shared to be successful for you? Does that make sense?
Yeah. I've really gotten that a lot out of getting along to... I've still got key little nuggets of things that I've heard from people like Harmy and other people in the tribe when we go to those intensives. So I guess I'd have to say the tribe.
Yeah.
Just talking to other people who are doing the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, I'm very lucky now, John being my brother-in-law, he's in business too, but, you know, I had no one around me in my family either side in the long way back who had my way of thinking, who was entrepreneurial, I guess you'd call it. Mm. You know, to be able to go and meet those guys and just talk to them about little stuff, you know, has just a sounding board and you know, I don't know how many times it happens. You're driving along and you're thinking about this and you're trying to think about it, and then you think of something. Oh, I know it happened there a month or so ago. And I thought, oh, yeah, Dan Peterson said this when I was talking to him in Melbourne, you know, and things like that. Yeah. That's probably what has been the most for me.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there's always the stuff, the nuts and bolts stuff to get on the university and say, yep, I saw that somewhere, and you go and find it and you check it out.
Yeah.
And it gives you a direction to go.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so what I'm hearing you say there is, really it's around the context, the environment that you're in.
Yeah.
You're in an environment with like-minded people and you're open enough to not think that you know everything and to hear them. Yeah. Regardless of where they're at on their business journey or how much money they're turning over, how many employees they've got, they've all got experience and they've all overcome challenges and problems that maybe you haven't yet, vice versa.
Yeah. Absolutely.
What would you say though around your willingness to like implement or willingness to get out of your own way as well? Because that's something that I've noticed with you is that you're always very open to listen.
Learning that, I told you before about that flip, learning that, the business is just a reflection of myself. I'm very aware that I'm my own biggest problem. I guess I come to it with that and a bit of fun. You know, I ask the question probably not so explicitly, but in 10 different ways, you know, where am I the problem in this? You know, how am I holding this back? How am I,
So
I always start with me.
And,
you know, so even down to, you know, two workers having a little bicker or something like that. And I go, oh, right, what's that got to do with me? How do I relate to that? You know, you know, just all that sort of stuff. The question certainly comes about me first.
Yeah.
And then that leads me straight on to, righto, what can I implement? What have I heard? I just feel like a little kid. I feel like a sponge, you know.
Do you find that the more that you learn, the more that you realize you don't know, the more that you know?
I don't know how I survived. Like, that's an exaggeration, but yeah, absolutely. And I find it fun.
Yeah.
Find it fun not knowing. Find it fun going to find the answer.
Yeah.
You know, the challenge has become
fun. Those pick a path books.
Pick
a path books.
It's fun. It's challenging. Yeah.
I've got a couple more questions, and if anyone's got any questions too, love to share. Vanessa said, could not agree more, Chris. Made me feel human again, like finding the tribe. Which is awesome. John said, big problem in your relation to the council having lots of money to spend. Big problem. Mate, what's the best advice you've ever been given from a mentor, from a friend, from anyone in general? What's the best advice you feel you've ever been given?
Oh, good question. Best advice I've ever been given. It's probably got me in a fair bit of trouble too, but
John's asked for it to be PG rated.
probably just you know, feel the fear and do it anyway. Go for it. You know, live. Like you're dying every day. You're dying. You know, it's times now. You know, if you want to, that's not around. That's probably, you know, that's around life, not business. You know, it's, you know, yeah, your kids, your wife, your husband, your partner, or whatever the hell you've got these days, who knows? You know, things you want to do. You know, you want to go and learn to fly, you want to go and scuba dive, you want to go and bloody throw a dwarf at a wall or something, you know, whatever you want to do, go and do it. Because, you know, you live once.
Yeah.
Have confidence, go and do it. And, you know, what's the worst that can happen? You'll figure it out.
The fear is actually, I was running a training on this the other day. It's like the fear that we start to experience, all that anxiety, all those not so pleasant emotions, or that the emotions that we've been conditioned to believe are not so pleasant, are actually coming out letting us know that we're about to enter unterrain territory. We're about to enter new territory. which is a good sign, because if we're always doing the same thing, it'd be fucking boring. Like if we're always stuck in the same place, it'd be boring. So it's a good sign when that anxiety and that fear comes up that we're about to step outside of what we know to be our comfort zone, or what we know to be what we know. Vanessa said, I now have a new bucket list. I think she's talking about throwing dwarfs at walls.
The Velcro walls. I want to have a go at that.
Takes me back to the Wolf of Wall Street.
Oh, that's where it was. Yeah, that's right.
All right. So one other question. What advice would you give like other tribe members in the community that are somewhere else in their journey? They may be behind, they may be ahead, they may be in the same space. Like, what advice would you give them from, like, you've been with us for a year or so now. What advice would you give them?
Couple of things. Do it. What I mean by that is, I remember once I had an experience about 7 or 8 months ago. I don't remember. Yeah, say six, seven months ago. And I was, I've read a lot of books, and reading. And, I must have, I've got a storeroom at my office, and there must be like, 2,500 books in there. I don't know. There's heaps and heaps of books. Wow. And I remember I had this experience 6 or 7 months ago. I was reading something. I think it was that blue book. How to train your brain. Yeah. Anyway, I've read it, and good sized book, and I'm sort of for a long time there. I was sort of I'd punch through a book like that in 3 or 4 days, and I put it away, and all this information was going in, and I remember I read this book, and it was kind of familiar, and yeah, I've read this sort of stuff before, and got through it in a couple of days. And I put it in there, and I moved a box or something, and there was the book. I'd read it like 2 or 3 years before, the same book. I've got two of these copies. If you want one, I'll send you one. But anyway, but then I...
So really, you've only got 1,250 books.
Yeah, maybe. Anyway, then what I did, and I'll come full circle. What I did then was thought, shit, I knew that was familiar. What I did then was I picked a couple of books, and I thought, right, I've already read all these books. I'm going to pick a couple that have really struck out in my memory. And I remember the first one was Own the Day by Aubrey Marcus. That was the first one. And I thought, righto, this month I'm going to actually do it. And that's what I'd say is that would be the advice. If I could give advice to everyone that would fit for everybody, it would be stop reading this shit and going through it and actually pick something and do it. Because there's this massive wealth of information out there, but it doesn't count until you do it. If you think about it, there's probably only 3 or 4 books in your entire life that if you actually did them, that would revolutionize your world. There's probably a book on finance, a book on health, a book on relationships, and take your pick. If you actually did them, you'd be living in the Bahamas and with a fantastic relationship, flying your private helicopter every day. I don't know, but whatever it is you want to do, actually do it. And I would say the same thing about the opulence program, things like that. There's a whole heap of information in there. Read it once, see what rings bells, and do it. Actually do it.
What would your 3 or 4 books be, Chris?
I'll tell you a good one, Gay Hendricks, The Big Leap. Is that what it's called? About the upper limit problem. Oh, I think that is a book that will serve me for the rest of my life. Because we just keep on coming up against the same problem in a different way.
Myself?
I'm trying to come up with a book about relationships, but nothing's coming to mind.
The Way of the Superior Man by David Dean.
Maybe. But I probably should come up with something in that area, I know. And then a finance book. Yeah, look, I just pick something from, you know, three or four areas and just a finance book. You know, Dumb Barefoot Investor and stuff like that. Personal MBA, I still use every day.
Yeah.
That's how I run my business. I sit down and look at those five areas and what are we doing this week? What are we doing today in each of those five areas? Probably that one for business.
Yeah.
Bloody boring read, but really good nuts and bolts stuff. Yeah.
Vanessa said Profit First by Mike McCoskey.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm still having issues with that. Anyway.
Yeah.
That's my bottleneck at the moment. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Anything else that you want to share? Anything else you'd like to share we didn't touch on or?
Not really. No, nothing that springs to mind, mate. No.
Right. So now from
one or the other.
Now it's your guys' turn, tribe members. What questions have you got for me, for Chris? Can be related to what we shared today, or it could be seemingly unrelated. Edie said Pumpkin Plan and Clockwork also. Good books. They can help you with your Profit First if you've got any challenge.
Mm-hmm.
What questions have you guys got before we wrap it up? Any question at all? I see a few more people jumped on a little bit later. Thanks for joining us. Did you have fun?
Yeah.
That was fun.
Good timing. Good to reflect on the 12-month mark. I think we must nearly be 12 months to the day. I'm not sure.
Maybe it's your birthday. Should I have bought cake?
No, it's not my birthday today. Yeah, maybe.
Any questions, guys, before we wrap up? Edie loves cake. I love cake.
Everybody loves cake.
What's your favourite cake, Chris?
Oh, there is a really dark chocolate one with those red frogs chopped up through it. What's that cake called?
Black Forest.
Black Forest. Yeah, that's the one. Yep,
yeah.
That one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love Black Forest. Cheesecake. If no more questions from you guys, we'll look at wrapping things up, letting you get on with your Wednesday afternoon. Chris, mate, absolute pleasure to jump on, to dive into your mind a little bit. So glad to hear around all that you've done and taken back in your business and where you guys are at. I think it's absolutely phenomenal and really excited to see where the next kind of 12 months goes for you guys. Like having a second team in, it's awesome. Things are starting to smoothen out. The problems never go away, but look at who you've become as a result of that. Just lastly, have you noticed that your relationships have changed as a result of the work you're doing with yourself?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. My business has gone from being all I do, working 24/7 and all I think about, to being able to be compartmentalized now and managed, and then I can go and be present with my family and my wife. And
So good. What was your key takeaways, guys? Jump in the chat. Let us know what was your key takeaway, and then we'll wrap this up. Vanessa said, how good that feeling, Chris? Yeah, Vanessa's recently made a transition. You don't know that Vanessa was working like so many hours before she joined us that she would often sleep in the office, not see a kid. She's paying herself about $200 a week. And that's changed significantly in the last few months, which is awesome. What was your key takeaways, guys? And then we'll wrap it up. Just some feedback. Did you enjoy? Yeah, Edie said, love culture. Yeah, culture's a great one. Louisa said, sorry, I missed most of it watching the week play. Yeah, you should. It was awesome. It was really good. Vanessa, loved hearing how open Chris was and how his journey has traveled in such a short time. Yeah, totally. Because think about it, like 12 months, dude, is not a lot of time.
No, it's not.
When you sign up, you're like, oh my God, 12-month commitment. But then when you get to this side and you look back at what you've actually achieved in that period of time and how far you've come, how far you've grown, regardless of necessarily even the financial returns or investments, but who you've become as a person that you can now take into every other area of your life moving forward. It's just incredible. It's just incredible. Cool. All right. Well, let's wrap it up. Hey, so grateful.
Thanks, guys.
Look forward to seeing you in the Gold Coast. Vanessa said, I personally never see us not being with TGC. Well, we'd love that. We'd love that too. We've got some really exciting things to share with you guys. We're pushing forward and having goal trackers built into the portal, which is pretty exciting, so that we can track your numbers and stats, which is something we've been working on for ages. But we're so close to having that launched, and a few other things to share in Gold Coast as well. So I look forward to seeing each and every one of you guys at the next intensive, Chris.
Cool.
We'll be in touch. Yep. Thanks so much for your time. And look
Thanks,
forward
guys.
To seeing again soon. Well, so I look forward to seeing each and every one of you guys at the next intensive, Chris.
Cool.
We'll be in touch. Yep. Thanks so much for your time. And look
Thanks,
forward
guys.
To seeing again soon.